Canto 34. Vexilla regis, said my leader in his tongue, perveneunt inferni. I thus knew the banners of the Prince of Sin were near upon us. Virgil, therefore try to look ahead. See if you can discern the evil one. As when thick fog or night comes to our hemisphere, and we see turn a windmill in the distance, such a sight I seem to see, a structure of that kind. Then for the wind, and lacking barricades against its brute force, I drew back behind my guide. I was already where the shades, it is with fear I set this down in rhymes, were wholly covered, and showed through the ice, like straws in glass. And there a thousand times in different ways they all paid the same price. Some lay down either way, some were erect, with either head or feet up. Some were bows bent face to feet. Deep down I could detect were more, and off to either side, who knows? When we'd gone far enough that my guide thought it good to show me him who once was fair, the brightest of the seraphim, who fought Michael in heaven, Virgil moved aside from just in front of me and made me halt. Behold, Diz, and the sad place, said my guide, where your resolve must be without a fault. Reader, don't ask how chill and faint I turned. I couldn't write it. All the words would fail. I didn't die, but couldn't live. I learned what living death and death in life entail. But you must ponder, if you have the wit, what I denied both life and death became. The evil emperor stood forth in his pit, from his mid-chest on up, and just the same, or worse, as my arm to a giant's arm to his compares. So think how huge his whole capacity for harm must be. His mighty strength gives you the link between his two lives. If his beauty was a match for all the foulness he has now, we see that all our sorrow came because he set his face against his maker. How miraculous it seemed what I now saw. He had three faces. The front one was red, and on each side of that he had one more, each ending at mid-shoulder. Overhead all three joined at the crown. The right-hand face was whitish-yellow, and the left-hand one recalled in looks the people of that place the Nile comes down from, stared at by the sun. Between each face two giant wings emerged, of size to suit so big a head, and sails at sea I never saw like these, quite purged of feathers, like a bat's. They beat like flails to generate the three winds by which all Cocytus is kept frozen. With six eyes he wept, and three chins let the foul tears fall, and bloody foam. Each mouth was of a size to take a sinner, torn up by the teeth, as with a harrow, and worse were the claws that stripped their backs to show the bones beneath. The soul up there most punished, and for cause, is Judas, said my guide. With just his legs he signals pain. His head is not on show. We do not see or hear the way he begs, for that same mercy he did not bestow. And of the other two with heads outside that triple throat, the noble one that hangs from the black face is Brutus, once the pride of Rome. But now his words, pierced by those fangs, are lost. And there's his fellow regicide, Cassius. So they expiate their crime. But night ascends again. We ought to move, for we have seen all, and we're short of time. This journey took time even to approve. Just as he wished, I clasped him round the neck. He watched his chance of time and place, and when those wings were spread he left the icy deck and caught hold of the furry flank, and then, from tuft to tuft between the matted hair and frozen crusts, went down. When we had found the thighs turn at the swelling haunch just there, my leader strained to bring his head around to where his legs had been, and caught the fur like someone climbing up. I thought for one bad moment we'd be back to where we were, in hell. "Hold on," he panted as if done. "From so much evil we need stairs like these to get away." And he passed through the cleft of a great rock, just squeezing by degrees, and sat me on the edge, where I was left to wait until his cautious step reached out. I raised my eyes to Satan. There he was, as he had been, but he was turned about, legs upward. If I was perplexed, I paused to let the dull decide, who do not guess the point that I had passed, the central knot of this world. There, I've said it. Saying less, my master thus, "Get up, for we have got a long, hard road to go, and yet the first hour after sunrise is exhausted." This place was a dungeon carved when crushed cliffs burst. No palace hall. It had floors you could miss your footing on if light were not the worst, and yet it swayed me to analysis. "Master, before I extricate myself from this abyss," I said as I arose, "I have perplexities still on the shelf. Clear them a little. Here's one case to close. Where is the ice? And how did he get fixed heels overhead? How is it sunlight flies without a pause, as if the two were mixed, unhindered between sunset and sunrise?" And he to me, "You think you linger yet on the far side of the center, where I took hold of the pelt of him you can't forget, that evil worm who pierces with his nook the middle of the world. But just so long as I descended, you were on that side, and when I turned, you passed where all weights throng together, drawn from all parts by the tide of heaviness, and now you are below the hemisphere opposed to that which swathes the great dry land, whose zenith, as we know, shines on Jerusalem, and therefore bathes the hill where that man who was born to live without a single sin was brought to die for all of you. There's none he can't forgive, except us who were born too soon. But try to think of where you are now as a sphere, a little sphere you stand on, the reverse face of Giudecca. When it's morning here, it's evening there, and him that we so curse, whose hair we made a ladder of, is still fixed as he was. On this side he fell down from heaven, and the land which used to fill this space, before the sea came in to drown the whole lot, chose the sea to make a veil for fear of him, and came up to our sky. Perhaps to flee from him, all here turned tail and rushed up, leaving emptiness. That's why this hellhole parallels on such a scale a mountain you will soon see. Down there is a place set at the far end of the tomb, from where Beelzebub presides in his grim glory. A place known from the long boom, not for the sight of that stream which descends through rock worn hollow by its winding course and gentle slope. And here the journey ends through hell, where that sad flood is a spent force, which later on as Lethe makes amends. My guide and I were on the hidden road that leads back out to where the world is bright. No need for rest. We bore an easy load, the task of getting back to the sweet light. And up we went, he first, I second, to the point where I could see an opening. And it was there I saw when I looked through, a sight more wonderful than anything. Some of the loveliness revealed to men by heaven. We could see the stars again.